Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
Sunday afternoon is here again, and we are with you. I'm Rocky Benisher, and this is Stage Right, the show that says to conservatives out there in the world of theater, get up off of that thing. Start getting your voice out there. And this is the show that's going to feature the conservative voices in theater. We look at trends. We look at playwrights and plays. We're delighted today to have a guest with us. I hope he's with us because I see he's called in. But I not yet didn't respond when I said hello, so I hope he's out.
Oh, hey, hi, Rocky. This is Hank. I am here, Rocky.
All righty. And you heard it there, folks, and now you're sitting there saying to yourself, who could that be? Who could that be? Let me tell you who this is, folks. This is Hank Kimmel. It showed playwright whose work you heard me read last week, not his total body of work, obviously, but one particular work called Fairy Tale Ending. We're going to talk about that play. We're going to talk about a couple of others here, and I've got a surprise for everybody out there and Hank. So, Hank, welcome to Stage Right.
Thank you. I'm glad to be having a conversation with you. Thank you, Rocky.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. Okay, Hank, so for those of us who don't know out there, tell us a little bit about Hank Kimmel, what you're doing, and your theatrical background.
Rocky, I'm from the New York, New England area. I live in Atlanta now. I helped start a theater company called Working Title Playwrights. Our mission is we develop playwrights and new plays. We're not a producing entity, but we actually help develop scripts, and we more than just a monolithic kind of script. We help writers find their voices and get productions for their work. And since I moved to Atlanta, I moved down here to go to law school. I was going to leave my theatrical career behind, and I actually found as I've gotten farther away from New York, it's actually been much more fertile creatively for me, and it's a wonderful community here to work and create art. And I also support myself. I call myself a slasher. I also work as a mediator, a tennis pro, and I manage a small real estate company. So I find I need to be creative to make all the pieces put together. And Atlanta's, which by the way is a right-to-work state, it's just a wonderful business climate to raise and support a family and also be an artist.
So you are, I guess, the definition of a Renaissance man, a tennis pro on top of everything. And have you got your law degree?
Yes, I do have a law degree. My practice now is mediation, which allows me as a lawyer to practice theater as I help resolve landlord-tenant disputes, divorce disputes. So when I go to work, I'm really entering the middle of people's plays where they're trying to resolve their issues. And it's actually a productive and scintillating way. So I feel like I get live theater at work. I used to be a newspaper reporter, journalist. And the only thing I like being about a mediator is I get to hear the stories now, and instead of divulging the secrets, I get to keep them and actually instead of and also be a positive force for people as they go forward.
Well, I am very impressed at all the things you do and find time to do. That's just terrific. Tell me a little more about Working Title Playwrights. You say you develop playwrights and new plays, but you don't produce them. So then if I've worked with you in this group, and I have, and you're helping me develop my play, then what? What's my next step?
Well, what we do is we actually have different kind of programming. Our core programming is called our Monday Night Critique Session, where 4 to 6 writers bring in excerpts from their work. We have professional actors read the work. We have professionally trained moderators. And in a sense, in that way, it's a good way of creating community. Then we have readings of whole plays. We have workshops. We have educational seminars. Really, it's a way of building community, too, as we've developed a reputation where now we've been able to bring in actors who become writers, and then some of our writers have become producers, start their own theater company. We really become a link. One thing I find in theater is the days of just calling yourself one thing are coming fast behind. I do see it more of an entrepreneurial spirit in theater, at least here in the Southeast, where for me, I work also as a dramaturg. I run a theater company, and being a playwright is just one facet of being a theater artist. I see fewer people just calling themselves one distinct kind of entity within that.
And, well, a couple of questions here I got for you. Number one, given all that you do you actually eat or sleep? Is my first question.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. Sometimes I have a good day. I'll be at work. The judge will be late. I'll have some time to work on one of my plays. I'll go out to lunch. I'll have a play with me. And to me, as a theater artist, no matter what you're doing, whether I'm writing or coaching tennis, I feel like it's all feeds itself on that. It, to me, as part of it is being kind of a genuine, authentic life. And with, you know, so to me, it all feeds into each other, that the various roles become melded. I don't really see myself as being compartmentalized as much anymore. I feel like I'm have that playwright's voice, that theatrical outlook all the time. At least that's what I aspire to.
Mm-hmm. Is your group open to anybody, or must you be in the Atlanta area, or are you across the country? How does that work?
We're primarily, most of our playwrights are in the Atlanta area. We do have some regional interest. We did a workshop. We were able to draw writers from Tennessee and South Carolina. It is open to everyone since it's the nature of what we do is hands-on and live. We tend to be geared toward those who are more local. But certainly we actually had one writer in Australia for a while who was sending his things via email, and then we would tape them. And for him, when he was working on a specific play, that was one way of doing it. But I'd say primarily right now we're locally based, and with a little bit of a push, we might be able to call ourselves regionally based.
You have a website for this group? You know, the reason I'm asking all this, Hank, is because we have a number of listeners who are themselves playwrights and artists, and I'm sure hearing this, their ears are perking up, as, of course, are mine, but that's just my ears perk up because I look like Dumbo. So what is there a website or some way that people could contact
Working Absolutely. The workshop is working title playwrights, all one word, .com.
Okay. Is
a workshop.
All
right. And from that, and anybody has any, we're a 501c3. We've been incorporated for 13 years, so we all have the mechanics of that. I'm also involved with a less formal group. We call ourselves a church group because we used to meet on Sunday mornings, where it's a group of writers get together who we have a core of trust, and we will sometimes get together to write or share each other's work. And that's a fairly common offshoot of Working Title, where smaller groups get together and we'll read their work, but that's more of an informal, let's get together when we can.
Right. Well, kudos to you for all that. We're very excited. One last question about Working Title Playwrights. It's open to all political persuasions, is it not?
It is. One thing about us, we made the decision that we don't, there's not the quintessential Working Title play. I guess for us, we really want plays to be written in an engaging, dramatic way. It doesn't, to me, I never really think about the viewpoint, because we have writers of different ages, ethnicities, background, experience levels, and so there really is not a monolithic style or a monolithic topic for that. And I'd like to think that we embrace all subject matters and all kinds of perspectives.
Well, that's excellent. Again, folks out there listening, Working Title Playwright, all one word, .com. So Hank, for those out there, Hank came to me from a playwright whom we did not get to interview because she had microphone fright, C.J. Ehrlich. But we did talk a lot about her plays. Her plays, folks, was Spare Some Change, which was presented at the Republican Theater Festival in Philadelphia in 2012. Last week we read Fairy Tale Ending by Hank Kimmel. Hank, would you consider your work by and large conservative in any way?
When you said in sending me, we discussed some questions in advance too. I've never self-identified myself that way because I guess for me, it's such a struggle to write a play that's going to engage you and your neighbor and let's say my wife, for example. I don't really think of myself that way. But then when I was going through your question, I realized, you know, how do you find what a conservative playwright? And one thing, when you sent me a list of questions, you had conservative with a lowercase c, and that felt to me like, I guess I could look at some of my work. I'd say maybe I've written four or five pieces that I said, okay, I'm going to write a politically charged play, but I try to write it in a way that it can appeal to both sides of the aisle. Probably my most produced play is called Politically Incorrect Dating. And what I love about that play is whether it's a Democrat or someone who has Republican leanings will look at me and say, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I don't know if you want me to quickly review what the snapshot of that play is.
Please do. Yes.
It's about this guy who considers himself a progressive, open-minded, liberal person, but he's having trouble with the opposite sex. And he has a friend who's a girl who's found this perfect person for him. And she's was on the Duke, captain of the Duke lacrosse team. She's beautiful. She's a massage yoga instructor. Everything that, you know, if you have a fantasy woman would be there. And he says, you got to give me her number. She goes, well, I should probably say this, is she's actually black. And he goes, oh, that's no problem. Even though I'm the descendant of slave owners, that's no problem. He goes, well, I should probably tell you that she's also Jewish. He goes, you know, that's no problem too. I'm a vegetarian. It's not the same thing as being kosher. And then he says, well, there's one more thing I should tell you. She's also a lesbian. She's not political about it, but she likes the female touch. He goes, you know, I'm open-minded. I'm progressive. All those things are fine. You got to give me your number. And then she says, well, there's one more thing I can share. He goes, look, to be honest, what more can you say? And he goes, she says, well, she's Republican. And he hems and he haws and says, she goes, do you still want her number? He goes, And she says, never mind, I'll go ask her for a date myself. So it's, you know, it's kind of like someone is open-minded to the point, though, but that's kind of the threshold for people's open-mindedness. And I joke with some of my friends, too, who, you know, obviously in theater there's more of a left-leaning on that, too. And I've been in professions. I work in the law profession, which is a little more mixed, but I work in journalism. And you know, I think people will engage in conversations, and sometimes they go, okay, let me hear another viewpoint on that. But that play to me, I think, has been successful because people can read into it what they want. In some ways, I make my message in that you may think of yourself as open-minded, but there's a limit to that. And maybe that message is not necessarily conservative or liberal, but more universal. Hello?
Hank, are you there?
Yes.
Hank, are you now?
I don't know when I got disconnected from you, but I'm back. I called you from a different phone.
I am so sorry. I warned you this could happen. I am going to read the Riot Act to my cable company where I get my internet connection because that's where it seems to be. We have this problem occasionally. I'm so sorry to you and to my listeners. Let's pick it up where you were, Hank, because you were right on the roll. He says, I got to tell you one more thing about this young lady, and she is Republican. And then
he hems and haws and says, he goes, well, do you still want to meet her? And after he deliberates, she finally says, never mind, I'll go and spend time with her myself. So it shows the limits of open-mindedness. And I suppose that's more of a universal kind of message. We all like to think of ourselves as open-minded, but perhaps there's a threshold. So that play it's gotten a lot of play on college campuses too. So I feel like I'm a little bit pleased that the message, maybe through a back door, it gets through there about the limits of political correctness, if that makes sense.
It does make sense, and I've read that play, and it's funny, but it makes that message, and I think you're right. I think that's a message that people on either side of the aisle can embrace, because we're both guilty of doing it. I mean, let's be fair after all. We on the right will say, oh, it's a liberal, it's a Democrat, I don't want anything to do with her. I'll tell you, if she's that good looking, I'll be fine no matter what she is. Anyway, fairy tale ending. Now, folks heard me read it last week. Hank, you said you heard it and thought I was pretty good, is what you said.
Yeah, I thought you did a fantastic job on that, by the way. I was just saying, thank you for not having me read it. I thought you gave your audience a better service by doing it yourself.
Tell me if that one is considered, is that one of your quote-unquote conservative pieces?
You know, I was at a parking lot, and I saw a bumper sticker on a van. It was the only sticker on it. It said, Boycott Disney. And I'm thinking, I have no idea what that means. So I was just intrigued on that, because obviously someone's making some kind of political statement. And, I mean, it was the only political, and sometimes you see a car which has lots of political statements, and you go, okay, you kind of figure out from the three or four that are on there which way they're going on that one. I'm thinking, my goodness, going back to the time when I was dating, I go, sometimes you just couldn't figure out what was going on that. So I think it's, I'm not even sure if it's necessarily you call it a conservative play. I think it's just calling out political kind of statements in general. And honestly, to this day, I'm not sure what that means, with whether that's a libertarian statement, whether that's, you know, I guess I could see a number of different groups having that kind of mission or whatever. I'm not really sure, so I kind of like that idea. And yet this guy was going to go on a date and go to Beauty and the Beast, so there's kind of an irony of that, too, is maybe he's being more – this is really probably the first time he thought through those issues, too, and realizing, gosh, I just want to connect to another person. And so I guess, to me, maybe the message of that is sometimes – aside from the fact, I always get nervous when someone puts a bumper sticker on their car, because I always think it's the value. You've pretty much – taking out half the population that's going to buy a used car, but that's so I'm not really sure. That's why when I was pleased you liked that play and you read it, but I'm not really sure if you could classify its message as conservative or liberal or even libertarian.
Okay, and that's fair enough. I was thinking about the Boycott Disney issue too. I know at one time years ago, there was a threat to boycott Disney because there was a perceived anti-homosexual stand. That's been erased. So I wonder about that. But, yeah, that was great. That was great fun. And, of course, the kicker at the end, you have two tickets for Beauty and the Beast. And a lot of fun. Has that play been produced?
It has. I think it was on YouTube for a while, too. It was done in a short play festival. It was done in Atlanta. It's gotten a little bit of play here. There's an increasing trend toward short monologues, even one-minute play festivals. So sometimes it fits in nicely for that, I guess, with audience liking short plays and just almost more of sound bites. It has enough of a dramatic thread that it gets done periodically.
I noticed the trend, too. You're right, Hank. I noticed the trend towards shorter and shorter plays. I mean, for a while it was, when I first started out, it was, you know, the short play was the one-act play. And now the short play, and then it became the short play is the 10-minute play. And now you see books, 3-minute plays, 1-minute play, 8-second play. Do you think this is owing to the generation, the newer generations that or the younger generations that are that want their information quickly and are used to nothing else but instantaneous gratification?
I think that there could be a case made for that. I think there are a number of factors, too, in that a short – for me, I started writing off short plays because I was actually working even harder than as a lawyer, and a 10-minute play gave me – and I was raising 3 young children. It really gave me a chance to develop an idea fully and keep my concentration for it and also develop the craft. I also know that some theaters will use it as an opportunity to get more – actors, directors, playwrights working, and also if you have more theater artists involved, you also can boost the offerings, the points of view and all that. So I think artistically there's something to be said for that as well, too. But I think definitely is now I'm seeing a trend toward fewer and fewer plays with intermissions. When I first started, theater said, we want the intermission because that's where we're going to sell concessions. And now it's pretty much, look, if you can't say it in 90 minutes, then, at intermission, we're going to start losing our audience. And to So I think it's not necessarily a negative or positive trend. If a good play is a good play. But I guess
right.
to me the trend I see more toward plays is this trend toward nihilism. And I've had a chance to go up to New York. I try to see plays there and see the number of theaters here that produce new plays. And I see a number of plays where the characters don't care about their circumstances. It's almost nihilistic. And I guess it's supposed to reflect the generation, although if you look back to the 60s and 70s and look back in anger playwrights, it's not that new. But I guess to me that's more of a concerning trend. And my stepmom and I go to a lot of plays, and we're probably, I wouldn't say on opposite ends of the political continuum, but we probably have just different view on things. And together we come to that viewpoint, say, my goodness, the characters are burning down their house, but why? And why should I care? Why should I be engaged in that? So I see that as more of a concerning trend as a theater audience member.
Yes. Yeah, and I think you're asking exactly the right question, which is, why should I care about this? And, you know, when you mentioned a few seconds ago about the, let's say, theater producers saying, if you can't say it in 90 minutes, the audience is going to get antsy. Well, you know, it's the play's job to keep the audience sitting at the edge of its seat. And if the audience is getting antsy, it could be because there's just not a lot of good playwrights around keeping audiences interested. But be that as it may, I'll get off my soapbox now. I have a treat for you, or
okay.
Maybe it's a disaster. I don't know. And for my audience, Hank has a play, ladies and gentlemen, called Welcome to Our Holiday Show. I have a recording of it, recorded by yours truly once again. Welcome to Our Holiday Show. I'd like to play it for you now. It is starring Rocky Benisher as the only character, and Rocky Benisher's parrots, who like to chime in every once in a while. We ready, Hank? Are you ready?
Yes.
Here we go.
Welcome, parents, to our holiday show. Our hard-working and underpaid teachers with your delightful and overscheduled children have worked hard to put together something we thought you'd find meaningful, educational, and inclusive. And before we start the show, you should know there will be no reference to Christmas, Jesus Christ, Hanukkah with an H, Hanukkah with a C, Kwanzaa, Ramadan, Passover, the Four Seasons, the Three Wise Men, Pinocchio, Buddhism, Atheism, Monopolytheism, the Democratic Minority in Congress, the repeal of the estate tax, Jimmy Carter's latest book, Ralph Nader, Ralph Reed, or Ralph Cramden. There will be one reference to a burning bush, but this is meant in no way to be metaphorical, allegorical, allusional, illusional, or delusional, but as a way of reaching a compromise among the world's major and minor religions, and any A religions that might feel left out. There will be no sexism, exorcism, or sarcasm, and every reference to Harry Potter, except the one Adam Potter will ad lib, has been cut. Instead, we're going to have four diverse children read passages from Who's On First. Please note, the Asian girl has a Hispanic father and a Catholic stepfather. When she says who, it sounds like Jews. But nothing is meant to be derogatory, subliminal, or suggestive about this alternative pronunciation. So, sit back and enjoy the show. 'Tis the season to be jolly. And I mean that in a completely gender-neutral way.
Okay, Hank, did that
nice job. I enjoyed that. That's great. It was a nice treat for me. I hope it is for whatever audience you have remaining.
Well, no, I think this is going to get the highest ratings of all because of this piece. First of all, this is a fun, and I don't know why I felt compelled to read it with that voice, but I just saw this, you know, kind of old-fashioned school principal up there saying this. But What's your point there? What's going on in this play that you were? What point were you making there?
Well, it's funny because I appreciate how well you prepare for the show. So as part of my preparation, I figured we wouldn't have a lack of things to talk about. But I did, just in case, I printed out that monologue because I thought maybe you might surprise me and say, okay, do you have a piece of your work you want to share? But to me, my kids are in school. They've been at various types of school. They spent a number of times in the public school as on the PTA. And I always remember just always having to navigate the sensitivities in all this. And I'm Jewish, and I'm fine with the manifestations. And I understand why some people aren't, but the manifestations of the Christmas holiday is actually one of my favorite holidays because the world is at peace and I don't have to celebrate with relatives. I get a day of quiet and I can just walk my dog down the most busy road where there are no cars on it. But it's just that idea, too, of it's kind of a humorous look at political correctness and really the sanitization of art and education and all this to the point where that's what's left of your Christmas show, too. And I'm a great believer in celebrating all cultures at some point, too, though, in a way, sometimes in an effort to accommodate, we sometimes dilute. And so it just and I love Who's On First, too. This kind of came to me. I go, gosh, who can find anything politically unobjectionable? Actually, a friend of mine actually wrote a play where a playwright was being criticized. This is my favorite play in the world. It's called Workshop This, and his play is writers getting criticized for his work. It's him being called racist, homophobic, and it turned out the play he wrote was Who's On First, and someone was just interpreting Who as Asian characters, and at the end of the play, it's just browbeat by what have I done. So in some ways, this is a tribute to him and my favorite play in the world, which my friend Dan Walsh has written.
Excellent. Well, you know, when I read this, I said, okay, this is, besides being very, very funny, and I had to read it a few times before I stopped chuckling while I was doing it, but couldn't shut the birds up, though. But it does speak to, I think, some conservative concerns out there in our culture, that we are diminishing the role of religion and the things that the foundations that this country was built on. Do you think I'm overthinking it?
Not necessarily. I do think this, again, this actually is probably my most produced play because there's been another trend. I think it's going to finally boomerang back is dysfunctional Christmas holiday shows, and they're shorts. It lends itself well to the holidays. And to me, this is play just seems to get picked up all over. In fact, I've had it sometimes done three times in different places on that. So I think it also, it's a very verbal play, and if you, to kind of figure out what's going on, I think people can relate to that. Because even, you know, those who believe, okay, yes, point out a strong message, I think it kind of points out, okay, there is actually some sensitivity, another viewpoint on that. And it kind of captures that. And sometimes in an effort to please all, no one gets pleased, and maybe that's okay. You know, I don't think necessarily and that's why, too, when you're talking about I consider myself a conservative playwright, I like to try to pick plays, write about plays that have some kind of ambiguity to it, so someone who has one point of view can think of things in another point of view and vice versa with that.
Well, Hank, I'm sorry to say that we are out of time here, but I could talk to you a lot more, and I hope we do via email, because one of the plays I want to ask you about is Class Dismissed.
Okay.
So hopefully we'll keep in touch. I'd like to talk about that play next week. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you all for listening to Stage Right and to our guest today, Hank Kimmel. Remember, give us a call at 347-884-9659 on our next show. I don't know why I didn't announce it on this show. And also write to us at stagerightaudio1@gmail.com. This is Rocky Benisher wishing you the best. And ladies and gentlemen, right now we are exiting Stage Right.